Welcome to the Evolution Eats podcast. My name's Noah.
And I'm Emily. And today we have Catherine Ward. She has a master's in nutrition science and is a registered dietitian. She was a classmate of mine at the Friedman School, and now she's done a lot of different things with nutrition science and nutrition science communication, and now she is working at Inside Tracker, which is a personalized nutrition company that came out of Harvard, MIT, and Tufts, with a lot of people from the Tufts Nutrition School working on it. And she works as sort of a nutrition scientist there and also a nutrition communicator, making sure that like the evidence is translated directly into good nutrition recommendations. So let's welcome her to our podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Fabulous. So Catherine, tell us, you can go back as far as you want to in time. Tell us how you got into the world of food, nutrition, and health science, and this can be academically or even personally, as far back as you want to go.
Sure. I'll just give you a walk through my CV, I guess.
That works too.
So I started off, in undergrad studying psychology and chemistry. I was involved in research labs in undergrad, and then I went to do research for a few years after undergrad at Boston Children's Hospital. I'd always been interested in nutrition kind of from a research standpoint as it relates to neuroscience. So I was always really interested in things like food addiction and food as a role in neurodegenerative disease, food on stress, mood, all of that. So I was in this research world, and I did the 2 years in a research lab to try to figure out, did I want to go into doing a PhD, like in a wet lab, I primarily worked with cells and mice, or where I wanted to go from there. So I started exploring those kind of types of options as well as other options, and I found the field of dietetics, which seemed to be the perfect way to stay on top of the science and, you know, keep learning new science and all that, but without really doing it myself, and more in a role where I could communicate it to others and kind of teach others as well. So that's how I arrived at my plan for dietetics. As Emily said, I was a classmate with her at Tufts. I did my master's in biochemical and molecular nutrition. While I was doing that, I was taking my dietetics classes at Simmons, also a college in Boston. After I finished my master's and the dietetics coursework, I went on to do the required 1 year dietetic internship, and then earned my registered dietitian credential after that in 2018.
Awesome. Why did you want to do the master's in nutrition science and the registered dietitian credential? Like, what did you think that would add?
So my entire background up until that point was in primary research, wet lab research. And I didn't really have much of a nutrition background at all, other than just my personal interest. So I wanted to continue with the science track because honestly, that's what I'm comfortable, with. And, you know, I went through all of the programs that Tufts had to offer, looking into what kind of classes you take, and the biochemical and molecular nutrition, they just had the coolest classes, like the macronutrients and micronutrients. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Right.
But then the dietetics background coursework was, well, A, it was required to get into the internship. You have to complete an accredited coursework.
Okay.
But also, it was so important for just to get that standardized education in all of the different areas of dietetics, because there's a lot of different areas you can go into. So before you start the internship, they want to just make sure that you are solid in things like food service, clinical, and science, and just all the areas. So
yeah, good. So you actually did want to. So when you applied to Tufts, you thought you wanted to do the registered dietitian credential at the same time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I applied at the same time to both, and I started both at the same time.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
Are these relatively new programs at Tufts, or do you think that there's been more interest in these topics recently? It sort of feels like there has been socially.
What kind of topics do you mean?
I mean, just like in the sense of, science and health science. It feels like we're approaching these age-old topics in a new way finally, but I'm curious if that's been going on in academia for a long time.
So nutrition science has absolutely been a field for a very long time in academia, but I do definitely agree that there's a lot more media attention on nutrition science lately.
Right.
And that's something that, as a nutrition scientist and dietitian, that's the intersection that I work at. And that's the thing that I have to deal with most, honestly, is either media asking questions about nutrition science or responding to media's interpretation of nutrition science.
Right. Oh, we know that struggle.
Right. Yeah, we did. Yeah. We talked to some other people. I think we talked to one other dietitian and another friend of mine who does like food in the social media space as well. And yeah, media is definitely a tricky thing. I think especially with nutrition, there's historically been a lot of controversy. And so I think a lot of people don't know what to believe in terms of what's good for them, what's healthy. So that's a really tricky space to be in, but I think it's an important space to be in.
It definitely keeps you on your toes. It keeps you staying up with the most recent research, keeps you up to date with everything, but then you have to always be ready for those kind of questions.
Sure. In your sort of ongoing efforts to do all this, how do you stay informed most easily?
Well, my job actually helps a lot. So I work at a company called Inside Tracker, which is a personalized nutrition company. And we provide recommendations, nutrition, lifestyle, supplement, and exercise recommendations based off of a user's blood biomarkers and then a series of questionnaires that we ask them. And all of those recommendations that we make are 100% based on science. So you can, if you're an Inside Tracker user, you can go into your profile and like click on the recommendation and see sources that are supporting that recommendation. Part or a big part of my job there is to keep all of our recommendations up to date. As you know, wow, nutrition science is changing every day.
Oh yeah.
So part of my job is monitoring new research as it comes out, updating our recommendations, or analyzing new research topics as new research comes out.
That's cool.
My job does that for me.
I feel like
I don't have to do too much of that independently.
We rarely find people that literally have to do that as part of the job, but that's really great to hear. Makes it more authoritative, whatever you need to put into to work and get out of it. So the company's better poised to provide, hopefully, good information, good advice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's what the company is built on. So it's a big priority for them.
Is the company relatively young? Did they get founded recently or have they been around for a while?
They've actually been around since 2009, but kind of behind the scenes, they've grown very naturally, but now they've gotten pretty big. Great growth these past years.
Great. And that's sort of around the time that I would think this craze has started. I know in podcasting world, there's now plenty of health science, nutrition, fitness, dieting, advice and information out there. We've got more and more scientists starting their own podcasts. It's talked about on Rogan all the time. Know at least one of the people that works for Inside Tracker has gone on Rogan. So it's definitely something that people, at least in this space, are finally aware of. But I would call 11 years relatively new. I mean, in the sense of just the history of sort of American eating and media, I think that counts as relatively new.
Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, it's new. If you're a 11-year-old startup in the startup world's a little old, but definitely in the like grand scheme of things.
Sure.
Personalized nutrition and Inside Tracker is a new concept for sure.
So how can you like explain a little bit more about how the biomarkers work? Or do you know how to like they choose which biomarkers to use?
Yeah, so specifically, can walk people through who may have no background in advanced chemistry
or
and
like
nutrition.
What even is a biomarker?
What's actually going on when someone approaches your company and wants to work with you?
So what is a biomarker? First of all, biomarker is a fancy word for just anything you can measure in your blood that gives any sort of indication as to like your health. So like your blood glucose is a biomarker, and that's one thing we measure. So the ones most people are most common with are the ones that are measured most typically in your doctor's offices. So we have glucose and we do lipid panels and vitamins and minerals, stuff like that. Those are all blood biomarkers. And we take, I guess it depends on the product that you order, which biomarkers you do, but we measure a very wide range from your basic panels to things like liver enzymes, to things like markers of athletic performance, so like muscle breakdown and recovery, hormones, so like DHEAS and testosterone, and then, you know, a wide variety of vitamins and minerals too. So we take all of those, and then basically if you're out of the optimal range for those biomarkers, we give you recommendations to kind of optimize your health by getting you back into the range for those biomarkers.
Cool. Very cool. I guess one of my questions is, like, I guess the basic one you could probably, the basic metabolic panel you can have done at a doctor's office, right? So is part of this, like, that you're measuring, like, new biomarkers, novel markers that it's harder to get measured at a doctor's office or, like?
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of these biomarkers, if you ask your doctor to measure your something like creatine kinase, or even vitamin D can sometimes like be tricky to get your doctor to measure for you. Sometimes they'll say like, oh, you don't need to measure this. And then the out-of-pocket cost for getting that test done by yourself is much higher than the inside tracker cost of bundling them all together. And with our whole thing too with the inside tracker is you get the whole platform and you get those recommendations. So even if you get all this tested by your doctor, they may not give you these, they may not have the nutrition expertise to give you recommendations for how to best improve that.
Right. So the doctor could basically say, oh, you're, you know, you're below some nationally recognized standard of what this number should be, but they really have no sense of what to do at that point, except supplement or do some sort of large macro scale type change, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
Probably most doctors.
We've discussed in the past, and with other doctors, basically, they're not getting a very good basis in nutrition education during med school, unfortunately. So you do have to separately find professionals who have that expertise, and you could get professional recommendations really absent this other critical information, unfortunately. So it's good to have
that's something I see as a dietitian a lot too, is people saying, oh, I came to my doctor with this issue, but they really couldn't help me on like a nutritional side, or they told me to do this, and it's like, it's ridiculous. And so yeah, that's something we run into as dietitians a lot, is people coming to us after seeing a doctor and being like, I need more help than what they were able to give me.
Do you have to have a referral from a doctor to see a dietitian? Is that a dumb question?
No, it's not a dumb question at all. It's really, it can be complicated.
I guess to get it covered under insurance is what I mean.
To see an outpatient dietitian covered under insurance, you would need a referral. If you do have certain medical conditions and the dietitian has a private practice in which they cover or they accept insurance. So if you have like diabetes, I think you can go see a dietitian maybe without a doctor's referral, but I'm not 100% sure on that one.
America.
It probably depends on, right, who's in political power and what state you're in and stuff.
No, I think it points to our catastrophized sort of, this is not a critique at all in the system here, but mainly it's, okay, sort of a critique of the system. It's that
critique of the system, not of the dietitians.
Not of the dietitians at all, right? So that it has to be a catastrophic, widely recognizable problem before there's this sort of, oh, clearly you need to have this looked at. Clearly you now are justified to see a dietitian. Whereas I'm sure, you know, the 40% of Americans who are now obese who may not be diagnosed with some other disease, they could need to see a dietitian too. And that's not going to be covered. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. And even the fact, something that you said is once it becomes a big problem, then you go see a dietitian.
Right.
No one focuses on the prevention of that problem in the first place.
Anyone who's at
risk.
That's
another thing that I think we need to focus more on.
Right, exactly. I mean, you've got 40% who are clinically overweight. Then you've got another percentage who are at risk of becoming overweight or even having issues like that. Then there's other health issues. So it would be beneficial for more than half the population to have access to this covered. But here we are. And I think a lot of these podcasts and our discussions about food and health and sustaining human society end up coming back to, well, how do we sustain the human bodies in that society? And we're not doing a very good job of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's kind of interesting to me with our sort of interest in sustainability, is do people consider health as part of a sustainable eating or like a sustainable diet? And, you know, sustainability is such a broad word that I think mostly people focus on the environmental sustainability, but I think if you bring back sustainability to sustaining, like what Noah said, sustaining the population, then you could bring in health to that for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. Yeah, if you think about sustainability, most people turn to like planetary health, but you know, the state of our healthcare system today, that's not really sustainable. The like billions of dollars that get spent on that. But yeah, from what I found, what's good for the earth tends to be good for humans.
That's a great perspective. So does Inside Tracker provide any recommendations or have sort of a general opinion on sustainable eating? What are the relationships between what you're suggesting people do dietarily versus maybe what's is sort of sustainably recommended?
So sustainability is not really something that's addressed within the platform, but I do think you'll, if you look into the blog, you'll see that we do talk about it Because it's just something that's interesting to a lot of the people that, you know, the types of people that work at Insight Tracker also tend to be interested in sustainability. So I think we do have like blogs covering the topic. And then for the most part, even though we don't take any sort of stance on sustainability at Insight Tracker, a lot of the recommendations are kind of those like would be in line with a sustainable diet. We, you know, most of the recommendations revolve around fruits and vegetables and whole grains and plant products. We do recommend, you know, fish and meat and some in for certain recommendations or in certain circumstances. But overall, it's pretty sustainable.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, because it really interests me, the Eat Lancet report. I'm not sure if you're like super familiar with but it was like the basic.
Yeah, I ran into that. Yeah.
So it was sort of like the first major study that was kind of like, plant-based is better for human health and the environment. And so there's definitely some controversy around that, which we've like explored a little bit, but I think we generally agree with that, definitely like on a large scale, especially considering the way a lot of factory farming is being done right now.
Yeah, right, in the sense that it's interlinked with being sustainable, right?
Yeah.
So if you recommend someone eat, I don't know, let's say more dairy products, and all they're getting is the worst hormone-laced factory farm milk they possibly can from overseas or some horrible place here, I mean, that's not going to get a better health outcome for them in sort of a terrible, you know, miniature example there. So I think there's a piece of this that makes a lot of sense to have it be integrated, but just saying, okay, you need to have, you know, a good quality source of food here and fix the fruit and vegetable intake, that's going to make sense wherever those nutritional items come from.
Yeah, and I think compared to maybe a traditional American diet, that would make the diet by default almost more sustainable.
True.
To just focus on health. Oh, also like...
Yeah, that's where your starting point is.
Right.
Yeah.
Any shift towards...
Yeah, speaking of starting point, just to interject quickly, do you have any sense, of course, without revealing the secret sauce here, do you have any sense who's really coming to the platform, to Insight Tracker? Is it people who are doing more maintenance for their health and nutrition? Is it people who have already encountered a problem and are trying to repair a problem? What's sort of the average clientele look like?
So when Insight Tracker started, our initial clients were... We got a lot of athletes, people very focused on nutrition for performance and optimization for performance. Hmm. And I would say we have a very broad mix. Some people do come in. One of the chief complaints is fatigue and like my performance is off and my doctor hasn't been able to really help me. Let's take a deeper look into my blood biomarkers and see if there's something going on here. But then we've expanded quite a bit. So we are... expanding more and more into your general kind of wellness consumer.
Yeah, I would sort of imagine that makes a lot of sense, but as the platform grows, there are more regular people than there are athletes out there. So if you're going to expand, it's going to be to regular people. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I would say the type of person that is likely to proactively purchase this test and take an interest in their health, they're probably, you know, more likely to be proactive about their health in general. So it's probably a little biased.
Yeah, that is true. And that says nothing bad about you guys. I think that sort of speaks to the effort involved here and that it's going to be, at least in this American system, I could imagine a system where this was covered under some, you know, really nice government's insurance policy. And it certainly is not the case here. So,
you can use your FSA dollars to buy an Insight Tracker test. So, fun fact.
I would never have guessed.
You have some extra
never have guessed.
Your health plan.
Not so bad then. But that's helpful. Okay, so that's good to know.
Sorry, what is that for me? What is FSA dollars?
Yeah, can you explain?
Flexible spending.
Oh, okay.
Something? Flexible spending.
Okay.
Allowance?
Yeah.
For it's, allowance. It's under your health insurance. Okay.
I can grab the exact
information. So you can use your FSA to like buy... glasses or contact lenses kind of thing.
Okay.
Anything, any like of those accessory charges, health related.
Flexible health.
It's pre-tax dollars.
Health flexible spending account. Oh. Part of a benefits package.
I probably just don't pay enough attention to the details.
I think most people don't. And most people don't recognize, I think, what can be done. Certainly, I mean, I'm guessing that's not actively being advertised by every person that has access to that. So there seems to be an insurmountable barrier of effort and information for some people. I mean, otherwise we would just see better health outcomes, I think, in this country or something. There's a lot of momentum towards not doing this and not putting in the extra effort. So
yeah, navigating health and health insurance is really hard.
I mean, we're not professing to even be extra presented. It's just that we're aware, right? We're aware of these challenges in the first place, which I think some people aren't even at that stage yet. So be warned, public listening to this. it is possible to figure things out, but it's definitely not something that the average person has figured out yet. So,
well, we were reading your article this about like the meat plant-based debate. When you're writing a blog or when you're writing a piece on nutrition, how do you make sure that like the sources that you're using are robust?
As for that specific article, forgive me, I wrote that a little while ago. But that one, that was the article that they were proposing new guidelines for red meat intake based on a series of systematic reviews they did. So five systematic reviews, and then one review on people's attitudes towards meat, which was something I found interesting that they would consider in a guideline. But so for that one, what I did was I really dug into each one of the reviews, the science behind it, you know, what they found, and then how they interpreted their own findings was one of the red flags for me personally when I was reading that. Mm-hmm. And then for that, especially too, I dug into what was this organization behind it. And so the organization that every time there's a big systematic review like this, there's usually some sort of funding body or funding organization behind it. And trying to dig into what's that organization's goal is, unless it's like a university, is usually important. So for that one, an independent organization of clinicians. And their whole thing was that they're saying they weren't biased at all. And they had, they were completely independently funded or something. And that was true. They didn't have any funding from any outside sources. But a lot of the people that made up that organization had been involved in the meat and dairy industry before, which is something that we pulled out. So not quite as unbiased as they claim to be. Yeah. And then we kind of wrote an article around that. And in general, that's just something I try to pay attention to, especially when creating recommendations, if we're looking into the research behind a specific topic. If it's a topic of any controversy at all, or if it has the potential to have any sort of like industry interest, that's something that I look into for every paper that I review for a topic, if it goes on the platform, where the funding came from, and then who's on the paper kind of thing.
Excellent. Excellent.
Sorry if that was a very roundabout answer to your question.
No, that's exactly what we wanted to know. I mean, this is something that, you know, the three of us have had some exposure to, but the average person just, again, cannot get over that effort barrier to begin figuring out how articles come into existence. They think when they see a scientific article, this is truth from high above.
Well, it's also just a lot of work for the average person to do this. So,
well, again, it's sort of about tall walls, but actually small distances between the walls, between the hurdles, I like to say, because the actual effort involved, you know, poking around for 10, 20, 30 minutes to get the background of a really important, you know, nutrition recommendation. If you're going to read articles that change how you consume food for the rest of your life, spending 30 minutes poking into who wrote the article is not an impossible goal. However, having the industry knowledge, having the skills to figure out, okay, the fact that this connection to this organization means this, and that this company is actually wholly owned by this company, a subsidiary of this company, those little connections make all the difference. And the average person is not equipped right now or not desiring to be equipped really to deal with those shells and playing the Russian nesting doll game of figuring out who's actually sharing information. So I'm so glad you're doing that.
It takes a while to become familiar with all these organizations too. So even just recognizing it at all.
Right. Most people, it's not their job to do this research and to be thorough about this. So they, you know, they don't spend the time.
I will say it's not something we come across too often when it comes to food recommendations, but it's more something that we're very careful with supplements recommendations.
That's interesting. Yeah. Can you expand on that a little bit? See what question
do
I
sure.
have specifically?
Please do.
I'm really interested in that, the supplement industry and like functional foods and stuff like that.
Me too. So I'm really interested in the supplement industry, but yeah, that's something that we're really careful of, because a lot of supplement research, if it's a very common supplement, there's typically enough independent research behind. But if it's more of a niche kind of like herbal or botanical supplement, no one's really doing research on it unless it's someone with an interest in it or that's selling it, which is a tricky issue anyway, because if no one else is doing research on it and that's the only research, you can't just discount all of it because it could go somewhere. But at least that's my personal, but for Insight Tracker, we make sure there's independent research before adding anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. Again, with the rise of popular interest in nutrition and in health sciences, there's been a real uptick in sales of supplements, of all sorts of hacky diet things, all sorts of health-related items and cosmetics of all kinds. So this is something that really, really worries me. And the folks that I've spoken to deep in the medical profession think that pretty much 99.8% of it is marketing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what do you think about, I was going to ask you, like, what do you think as a dietitian and nutrition scientist? I personally think there are cases when supplements can be helpful, but in general, the industry is too big. Taking out individual nutrients a lot of times is not really what we need. We need to focus more on like whole foods. But I mean, I do think there are some medical uses for it. What do you think? What's your professional opinion on it? I think it's somewhat controversial.
Yeah. So personally, yeah, I definitely think getting your nutrients from whole foods is the way to go. Some nutrients, like vitamin D, a supplement can really help, especially, and things like iron too. A supplement can really help if you're following a specific diet and you need to supplement those nutrients. So I take a very personalized approach when it comes to those kind of vitamin and mineral supplements. And Insight Tracker is great too, because you can test your levels. And if you're low, then you can make an informed decision about if you need to take a supplement for this. And then you can retest and see if it's working or stuff like that. So for that, I definitely prefer like a very exact and personalized approach to taking supplements like that, rather than kind of a blanket multivitamin approach.
And I know I guess you kind of touched on this, like for vegetarians and vegans, right? I think that most nutritionists might recommend certain supplements for them.
Yeah, like an iron or a B12.
Iron or B12 specifically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to lead the question here at all, but I mean, for the average person, let's say you have not had any indication that you are deficient or you're not doing this for a special diet, the average person probably shouldn't be going and taking a bunch of exotic supplements, should they?
No, I mean, I suppose if you are not having any signs of a deficiency and if you're not following any sort of restrictive diet, you're probably fine getting what you need through food and, get a little sun exposure.
Yeah.
Vitamin D. Yeah. But that's just kind of the vitamins and minerals class supplements. So there's another classification of supplements, those herbals and botanicals, that I find actually really interesting, but that can get super sketchy with some companies. So as in regards to those, I think there are some really, really interesting ones like ashwagandha for like stress, ashwagandha and rhodiola for stress and sleep and stuff like that. I think there's some really interesting things and some really interesting research in that area. But it does get dicey, and just having the science background to really evaluate the evidence or looking into every brand that you buy from is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a different topic from.
Well, no. We're good to explore.
It's pretty darn related.
Yeah, I mean, cannabis is another thing that I feel like is. I mean, it's very just one of the many, many different kinds of non-thoroughly tested supplements. I think that is, I mean, especially out here in California, that's starting to be just everywhere. I mean, this just makes me think about something that I think about a lot, which is how much evidence should we have about something before we make a public health recommendation on it, you know? And I guess people, there's not really a hard and fast rule there, and it's complicated. But, you know, right, with these like early supplements, like especially like the herbal stuff, there's not just because there hasn't been rigorous studies on it doesn't mean it's necessarily bad, but it doesn't mean it's we should recommend it necessarily either, right? It's like, how much evidence do we need to acquire before we sort of make it a broad recommendation?
I definitely try to avoid making any sort of broad recommendations for things that don't have solid research. But I think the level of research that I need when I'm deciding to take something personally versus when I'm deciding to recommend it is very different. Like, I'll try something out on myself, but I wouldn't necessarily like recommend it for someone else unless I was very sure about it.
I like that perspective. Yeah.
And how would you sort of go through a checklist in your mind or on paper to really determine that there was a good body of evidence supporting what you were going to recommend to someone else?
So if it's just for my starting point, little advertisement for examine.com here, but I love them. They have great analysis of almost every supplement that you could think of. And they have like, they have all of their research cited, and then they have what they created, a human effect matrix. So like the size of effect and the consistency of the effect across studies, which I have found very useful. So that's usually a starting point. And I'll read, if it's personal, I'll read that and then some primary research, and then I'll, you know, decide to try it on myself. I don't have like the highest of standards when it comes to that. But if it's something for a product or if something for someone else, I'll look into it and then look into the studies that exist on it, and then always check where those studies are coming from, whether it's from ingredient supplier or supplement company versus an institution. Mm-hmm. And if a supplement has enough studies that are independently funded from institutions, not from the suppliers, then that's likely a solid effect.
Great. Yeah, we'll throw something a link to
more comfortable recommending.
We'll throw a link up to examine.com in the podcast description and notes so people can start to Google their supplements.
They're the best. They don't make supplements.
Yeah, no, it's on their website. We do not sell supplements.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like to bring it full circle, I think even me, I'm like a little bit hesitant about like super personalized nutrition and super personalized medicine. I mean, I think it can offer so many opportunities, but I don't know. There's just like a couple, like, at what point are we going to stop optimizing every little nutrient, you know? Like, I don't know. That's my perspective. What is your perspective on that?
I think it just depends all on what your goals are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, what's driving you? If you're, like, trying to optimize yourself and are willing to invest in the personalized nutrition, you know, whatever product you choose, then that's something. But it's not something that I think, well, I guess the goal is to make it work on a public health perspective, but that would be a big undertaking.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I mean. Like, maybe everybody does not need that or does not want that, and maybe certain populations.
Well, I think we're lacking a strong guiding light force in this context. Yeah. I think there's no real sense of what good nutrition is, what sustainable eating is. There's a lot of marketing for the opposite. So in fact, what we see is this sort of weird false narrative of really healthy looking, skinny, attractive people marketed eating terrible quality food, which makes no sense for the average person. I mean, it must psychologically torture them because they see this thing computing in an advertisement that does not end up computing in real life at all. So that's going to have to change a little bit if we want to have actual goal-based nutrition and get people having a real understanding of what it takes. Because right now we're essentially marketing a big lie or a series of lies here.
Yeah. There's always going to be that push and pull between, you know, industry and marketing and big industry versus public health and the nutritionists, I guess.
Yeah. And then there's people who are actively advertising things which may do nothing and not even be unhealthy for you. I think that's the risk with a lot of supplements and nootropics and strange things like this. Certainly herbals, botanicals, things that may seem nice and look nice and have some research behind them. But the main risk that I've seen is that they do nothing, in fact, and that it's
a
lot
of waste of money,
a lot of snake oil, a lot of marketing. You know, I mean, would that be a better alternative future to only seeing marketing for fast food? Maybe, but you know, the third option, option C of actually targeting what's healthy and what makes sense in the real world, that'd be what we'd like to see. So
you mean the third option as opposed to supplements?
Right. So if option one is fast food marketing and option two is supplement marketing and option three is, oh, actually, let's think about human health.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah, I guess we could end with, like, what do you see as some of the positive things that could come out of personalized nutrition? So, like, what are some hopeful things that you think could come out of it or are already coming out of it with companies like Inside Tracker and similar things?
I think just having guidance that's tailored specifically to you. Like, yeah. I am fully on board with public health guidance, but when you get into the nitty-gritty of, like, how much of what to eat, mm-hmm. really tailoring that to you as a person, to you and your taking into account your habits and your eating habits, your exercise habits, your lifestyle, all of that. Just the ability to take all of that into account and give you really tailored recommendations that can maybe be more efficient in helping you rather than just kind of those broad scoping recommendations.
Yeah, that is the modern way.
If that makes sense.
Having one's cake and eating it too. But that makes perfect sense. I mean, no two people are exactly alike. And there are certainly some things that nutritionally make sense for everyone. But, you know, the health needs of an Olympic athlete are so different than an average office worker.
Yeah,
that exactly. Like, no two people's needs are exactly alike. Right. And in a public health setting, you kind of have to generalize it just right. So it can apply to everyone, but right. The individual distinctions you can really pick apart with personalized nutrition a little better.
That's great.
Yeah, I really like that answer. I mean, I think that public health recommendations are, they're not personalized. They're not medicine. They're not meeting one-on-one with the clinical dietitian, and they're maybe, you know, we need both. There are different purposes for those, and I like that. I like that answer. I think there's a lot of good that can come out of it, out of this, that we maybe even don't even know yet.
Yeah. Do you think we're just at the beginning of this? I mean, is there a lot more to see in personal nutrition and in sort of up to the minute science like this?
Oh yeah, definitely. Personalized nutrition, it's a very rapidly growing field. So I only really talked about Inside Tracker, and we do the blood biomarkers, but you see products looking at other aspects, like personalization of other aspects, like you're using your microbiome or your DNA biomarkers, and that's entirely new fields. They're both growing really rapidly. You see more and more of these products. You see more and more interest in it. So it's exciting. We'll see where it goes, but hopefully interest stays high.
Great. So thank you. I think we're good.
We sincerely appreciate you coming on and sharing your insight here. And as things push forward, I'm sure we'll have you back and talk about the new trends in this industry all over again.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
We'll have links in the podcast description. If everyone wants to check out Inside Tracker, do they just go to insidetracker.com?
Yes.
Fabulous. We'll keep links everywhere. So once again, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.